Hello, sports fans. This is Dave Griffin. You're listening to Locks of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk. Locks of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
Yeah, everybody have a show today. We had snow today, show today, show tomorrow.
I don't know if you want that on your credit card bill. You know, saying the WCW network on it. I mean, like,
your dad would look at that and be like, Dave, you have something to tell me?
That's the story that they still play.
Unbelievable!
You have your LeBron in the play. It's like, do you really care about the James Jones at the end of the bench against the haters?
Maybe the board, the MikeFrancesa.com, was just ahead of its time.
Pioneers.
Exactly, yeah.
Pioneers, if you will.
We listen to this guy sit at a desk, picking his teeth every day, and all the dumb stuff he does. But it's not like we're changing the dial. We like Mike. You know, we hate Mike, we love Mike, all that back and forth.
Bingo.
Unbelievable.
The San Antonio Spurs, Dave. What do they say about him?
They're boring.
They're boring!
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for this special MLB postseason show. Live from Santa Monica tonight, through the courtesy of blogtalkradio.com and YouTube, over the Dave in the City channel, Ditcal/UserStuffDitcal for that. Good to have you with us here on a beautiful Wednesday night. The skies cooling, the air also cooling, and baseball heating up. And right now we are following the Giants against the Pittsburgh Pirates into the sixth inning. The Giants add a run to a grand slam that Brandon Crawford hit earlier in the game, and they now lead 5-0. Edinson Volquez looking very shaky in the middle innings, and he didn't have enough. He had to get pulled about an inning ago, and they're into the bullpen now in Pittsburgh. And that was the best starter they had. So it seemed to me that it was going to be a tough hoe. I mean, it was going to be a tough road to hoe for the Pirates, but the game's not over yet. They have a great bullpen. We'll see what happens the rest of the game, so we'll keep tracking that for you as well. But obviously the story right now in baseball is the opening game in that wild card round. The Royals and the A's. The A's are at Kauffman Stadium to play the Kansas City Royals in what was just a thriller from beginning to end. It went 13 innings. I think it went 13 innings. It may have gone 12 innings. But in the latter innings, the game winner by Salvador Perez, who was not hitting at all during most of the game. But the hit that counted was the one at the end, and it sent the Royals into the division series. What a great win for a team that had been waiting for a postseason for 29 years. I mean, to put it in perspective, I was 3 years old. I probably didn't even know what a baseball was in those days. So it really has been great seeing the Royals win. Just a thriller. We have more to talk about this game. Plus, we'll preview all the upcoming division series, which start tomorrow. And the Giants, so far, look like they're going to be the team representing, but we don't know. We'll find out all that with our first guest of the evening. And he comes to us right from the streets of Philadelphia. Ari in Philadelphia, he's now joining us on the program. And I couldn't think of a better guy to have for this spot. I mean, he's been following the league very closely all year long. A big fan of the stats, advanced stats to be exact. Good to have him aboard. Let's introduce him. Ari, welcome to the program. This is great to have you here in a timely spot. How's it going tonight?
Great to be here, Dave. That is quite the introduction. I'm very humbled by that.
Thank you. And I mean it, too. This is going to be fun to break down. This postseason, I mean, when the matchups were announced, it really looked like it was going to have a lot of juice. And last night really delivered. Just a thrill all the way through. I know people are saying that the one-game playoff is kind of bogus, but this was a great game. I mean, let's talk a little bit about last night's game between the Royals against the A's. I mean, it was just so much thrill, so much palpable juice. What was it like watching that game last night? How did you feel going through all that? I mean, what did you enjoy most?
It was amazing. I mean, I can see rationally the arguments about the one-game playoff. It's not fair. It really is not fair, and it's less and less fair as the distance between the records of the two teams gets larger to have it decided by one game. But despite the fact that it's not fair, it brings tons of juice. It's basically game seven right off the bat.
Yeah.
So that's just amazing. And the game last night, you know, twists and turns and back and forth, and you know, basically the way I kind of looked at the game last night was the game was a lot like the Oakland season. They started the game, you know, dominating. They're up 7-3, and then it's the middle of the game, like the middle of the season, and then it all falls apart. And they end up losing by obviously one run in the 12th inning, and it was just amazing, back and forth and lead changes and really, really good stuff. Weird managing on the Royals side.
Oh yeah,
kind of. People are talking about it, but you know, he got away with a lot of weird stuff. But you know, and we'll see going forward how that goes with the Angels. It was just an amazing game. This game, I missed the last half hour of it because before I had to get on your show, I was tasked with putting my kids to bed.
Oh, so, I got you. Okay.
I haven't seen the last half hour, but I did see the Grand Slam. So I'm trying to catch up here as we speak. But you know, just getting warmed up here in the postseason.
Oh, we really are. I mean, this is just the beginning of what could be a very thrilling October. Just a quick comment about the pitching matchup tonight in the Giants-Pirates game. I just felt like the whole time I felt like this was going to be the Giants game to win. I mean, the matchup, I mean, I know that Edinson Volquez had a great season. He had low 3, like 3.0 something ERA. But to me, it just seemed like who was the more seasoned pitcher? I mean, granted, he's not that old, but who was the guy that to me had the stuff? And I always thought that Madison Bumgarner had the stuff, and especially tonight, he just razor sharp. And so he's doing great so far. We'll see if that holds. But, I mean, you've seen Edinson Volquez over the years. I mean, he would end up blowing up in a big way, you know, more often than not during the game. So it was tough for me to trust him in that matchup, especially in a winner-take-all game. So did you feel like this matchup, this starting pitching matchup, favored the Giants from the get-go?
I definitely agree with that. I mean, there's a difference, but you got to go with the track record. Edinson Volquez had an amazing August and September. I think his ERA in September was in the ones, maybe under one. All of the Pirates starting pitching has been amazing for the last month or two. But that's a month or two. You know, a year ago, Edinson Volquez was being released, I think, by the Padres. He was not good in April and May this year. He barely made the team out of spring training. And Bumgarner's been doing it since, whatever it is, 2010. He's only 25, and he's, I think, pitched in 7 postseason games already. So, yeah, I definitely agree they had the advantage here. But in a one-game playoff, that's kind of how it works out. I mean,
right.
You know, it's not like the Pirates. The Pirates were in a race until the last day. They couldn't line up their pitching the way they wanted to. So, they had whoever was lined up.
That's interesting because I think they were talking about this on the ESPN telecast too, and I agree. I was thinking the same thing last week. The fact that they were still in that division race actually could have hurt them because they couldn't set the pitching the way they wanted to. I was almost wondered because the statistical odds of them actually getting the division going into the final weekend, even though mathematically they were in it, I mean, that was a tough spot. I mean, I don't even know how you would play that, but it just didn't work out.
Yeah, I think they were in it until the season
last
ended
day.
On Sunday. I think they
yeah.
were in it until Sat. I think they were in until Saturday. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So or maybe Sunday, right?
It was Sunday. They had that game. It was interesting because they had Gerrit Cole against Johnny Cueto. I was watching this one, and you know, Cueto gets his own base hit to go ahead, and then the Reds added some runs, and it was at that point finally when they were eliminated. But if they'd won, the Cardinals would have been forced to win the game. They would have had to throw Wainwright out there just so that they could retain the lead in the division. So I guess it did come pretty close, but, you know, that's just a tough break for the Pirates because of the fact that it was still gettable. So they were that close. I mean, if they'd won, it could have been very interesting. but it just didn't work out. So,
yeah, I mean the way the system is, it's really important to win your division if you can.
Yeah.
You know, because of what we talked about at the top with the one game playoff, it's like, you know, it's a crapshoot. One game in baseball. The best baseball teams in history lose 50 games a year, so 60 games a year. So, you know, one baseball game, anybody can win it.
Oh yeah, that's true. I mean, you never know. I mean, we certainly see things playing out as what we might expect, but you could have had Madison Bumgarner just not have a good night, and then that would have opened the door for the Pirates, and all sorts of things could have happened. So that definitely lends into,
you know, there's a famous guy who says a famous thing. You know, you can't predict baseball.
No, you can't.
We've heard that over and over again. It and read it over and over again.
Absolutely.
But you can't. I mean, who thought last night was going to go 12 innings and end 9-8?
Right, right.
You know, Kansas City can't score. Oakland couldn't score for 2 months, and it's 9-8.
Incredible.
So, you know.
It's very true. I mean, that it was definitely, everybody said, oh, this is going to be like a 2-0 game, 2-1, 3-2, 9-8. So
you got John Lester, right?
Yeah.
And who thought a team with John Lester pitching up four runs is going to lose?
It's really funny how things can play out, and that's the beauty of October, though. I mean, it can be frustrating too, because you play 162 games of great baseball, but then it can all be undone with one bad moment. But still, that's part of the charm of it. At the same time, people have been on both ends of it, so. It's really interesting. So let's start with these previews. We have we have one matchup to be decided, but the others are ready to go. And our division series coverage begins tomorrow. We're not doing the games. I mean, but the division series begins tomorrow. Wouldn't that be great if we did play-by-play these games? It'd get you a color. And
we can't do play-by-play.
We can't do
nasty letters.
We'll get a letter for that. All right, so tomorrow we start with the Orioles against the Tigers and the Orioles, and this is going to be a pretty interesting matchup, but I don't think, maybe you won't have exactly the same buzz as the Royals because it's their first postseason in 30 years, or maybe the Dodgers and the Cardinals because they're just, you know, just glamour teams. I mean, big franchises, big history. Orioles still, and Tigers are pretty historic franchises, but I wonder if they have the same cachet. Nonetheless, two pretty good teams. And you're looking at, and the Orioles just had a nice season. I mean, just an incredible season. We didn't, you know, I don't really know what to say about their pitching, though, but the same can be said about the Tigers. Scherzer's pretty solid, and Price, obviously, we know his resume. Verlander came off a cliff, though, so that rotation is kind of dicey right now. Porcello's probably going to be in the mix. This is interesting. Let's get your first thoughts about Tigers against the Orioles.
Yeah, well, the Tigers' bullpen has been a mess what is it, 3 years now,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Papa Grande and, you know, all that. You know, for years and years, this has been their problem, and they've never been able to fix it. Their lineup is monstrous. They've got Miggy, obviously, Victor Martinez, and J.D. Martinez. In the middle of that lineup, they're going to mash. The rotation, you got Scherzer and Price, who both won Cy Youngs recently. I don't even know if Verlander is. Didn't we read the other day he's going to be in the bullpen this series?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he is going to be in. It's been that bad. I mean, his ERA, it's the worst ERA probably of his career. I mean, he looked awful this season.
But Verlander in a short appearance in like one inning. It's like when Verlander was, whatever year that was in the All-Star game, when he pitched the one inning, and he came out throwing like 101.
Nice.
You know, in one inning, a guy like Verlander can just blow people away. So, and that's exactly what they need out of that bullpen. And they've got Porcello, and who's that other starter on their rotation?
Lobstein.
Is
that the guy?
Yeah, no. That's not who I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay.
He's another one. But, I'm drawing a blank on his name. But he's and I'm going to feel stupid when I finally look it up after the show. But anyway, yeah, their rotation, Scherzer and Price, anyway, look really good. The Baltimore rotation is kind of shaky. the Baltimore bullpen, though, is very deep. Very deep. And, you know, basically, a game against Baltimore, if they're ahead in the sixth inning, you're going to have trouble. So these could be very short games for the Tigers to try to get ahead against the Orioles, against the starting pitching before you get into the bullpen. Usually you try to knock the starter out and get into the bullpen. I think for the Orioles, it's the other way around. If they can get, you know, if they can get their starters through 5 2/3, I think, with a lead, they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, you know, it definitely has reminds me of the 90s where you'd have games like that often. By the way, the guy in Detroit, what do you think of Anibal Sanchez?
That's the one.
That the guy? Yes, yes.
Yes.
He could spot start. It's an interesting thought. Or he'd be good out of the bullpen, too. I mean, that's a definite mm-hmm. guy to keep an eye on, yeah.
Yeah, that's the name I was thinking of. You know, Porcello has been good. Verlander has been their fifth best pitcher, which is crazy. but I don't know. Every year, people think they're going to the series, and most years they don't. But I don't know. Their lineup looks stacked as usual.
Yep.
And the Orioles had a really good season. They won a lot of games. They have an excellent bullpen, but. Well, I guess for both these, I was going to say the division was shaky, but the Tigers' division wasn't so great either. I mean, the AL East this year, the Bays and the Yankees,
yeah,
who finished in second place and weren't that good. And, you know, in the Central, the Indians and the White Sox, I don't know. It seems like, I don't know, maybe it's a little inflated considering who the competition was that they played a lot of these games in. But you could say that about either team, I guess. In this
series. I'd say so as well. Actually, I think what we have here is two teams that are pretty matched evenly. Both have very, as you mentioned, both have really good offenses. I was wondering about it with Chris Davis. He wasn't even having that good of a season, but he got suspended for amphetamine use on the 12th of September. Suspended 25 games. I'm assuming that goes into the postseason, and it didn't
it
seem
does.
Like they
he
cared.
He is eligible. He's eligible. He's going to miss 7, I think, postseason games.
Okay.
So if he's eligible in the ALCS if they make it, but not right away.
Okay.
So and they have to use a roster spot for him when they set if they make it to the ALCS and they want him to play in game 4, they have to have an empty roster spot where he's taken up a roster spot but can't play in the first 3 games.
Oh, I got you. Yeah.
If they want him available, but yeah, I mean he was hitting under 200, I think.
Yep.
Which is not great. You know, he's a power threat, but did not have a good year this year. But they lost him, they lost Machado, they lost Matt Wieters, and they just keep trucking.
Yep. I don't think anything really affects him. I mean, they still have Adam Jones, they have Nelson Cruz, J.J. Hardy. They've got a lot going on. Nick Markakis, that's a good outfielder. You know, one of the better hitting outfields I think in baseball. Honestly, that's a great outfield. All right, so
very deep,
very,
very
deep. Exactly, absolutely. I mean, we often didn't take that for granted in as far as hitting lineups, like the outfield. Sometimes it ends up being the weak link, like it was for the Yankees a couple years ago. But here, it's terrific. Similar idea with the Tigers, although Hunter's seen better days. Well, we'll see. So let me just get you a quick word on this. Who do you favor in this series? You don't have to give me the exact number of games, but which team are you, if you gun to your head, like which team are you leaning towards winning the series?
I would probably pick the Tigers. I think the two big starting pitchers and the three big hitters are probably going to put them over. That's just my pick. Obviously, you can't predict, you know, everyone says, but if I was picking one, that's who I'd pick.
Great. All right. This is Ari in Philadelphia joining us for our division series previews tonight on the program. And our next matchup is the surging Royals, who must have celebrated so hard last night after that thrilling, dramatic win against the front-running LA Angels of Anaheim. playing and very well rested. We also hear that Josh Hamilton should be good for the series. We know he's been hurt all the time, but apparently he's going to be healthy enough to play. That's a great lineup they've got there. Unlike the Royals, they have serious power, and it's led by Mike Trout, who is one of the most exciting guys to watch at the plate. Really good. And he can really bring it on the field, too. Some web gems, to be sure. Calhoun also takes up right. It's a great lineup. And their bullpen is better than it was when the year started. Houston Street, they traded for him from the Padres. A great trade, really, because they needed it. Ferrari was terrible, really terrible. So that was much needed. So from that point on, they've really been on a roll. They overtook the division when about the same time that the A's made that trade for Lester from giving up Cespedes. And suddenly the Angels were really looking pretty. And if I'm remembering, do they have the home field for the entire playoffs? Or is it the two seed? I think it's the entire playoffs. Am I right?
They have the entire playoffs, including the World Series, wow, because the AL won the All-Star game. So,
right.
So, they have it all the way through.
That's fantastic.
They won. I think it was 98 games. Which is, I mean, they are stacked. Their starting pitching looks a little shaky, especially since they lost Garrett Richards to an injury.
Yep.
But on the pitching side, it's kind of shaky, but that lineup, I mean, is there anyone in that lineup that doesn't have like 15 home runs this year?
I know.
it's top to bottom. It's a stacked lineup. And, they just roll. They just keep winning. They've been winning like that since July. Trout is Trout. Postseason. You can't imagine. But you never know. I mean, you don't know how the pressure affects guys, but he doesn't seem like a guy that's going to be affected.
Nah, I mean, he seems to be taking in the exposure and the media attention very nicely. I think he's taking it with aplomb, to be honest. So what we have here is a team like the Royals, who face long odds. I mean, let's be honest here. I mean, we had a good time watching them bunt like 100 times a game, but these guys against the Angels is going to be a tough out. I mean, how would the Royals go about beating a team with this much talent?
The Royals, to me, the Royals are, what I know about them is their speed and defense.
Mm-hmm.
Their outfield defensively is incredible. They have all these guys that are stealing all these bases. They don't have power guys. They've got Eric Hosmer, who should be a power guy, but couldn't put it together this year. And then I think he was hurt in August, and now he's back. They've got Alex Gordon, who is their best hitter this year, but, would he be, the fourth best hitter on the Angels? Fifth best hitter on the Angels, who is amazing. He's amazing defensively as well, out in left field. But their offense is small. It's a lot of running and a lot of bunting, which stat guys like me scratch our heads when the manager does that. But it reduces the probability of scoring to advance the base and give up an out. But anyway. that's neither here nor there. It's just weird managing. Actually, the guy, one of the guys I'm a fan of, wrote an article today about,
we're losing Ari.
And you have to take into account, you got me?
Yeah, I think I got you back. We kind of lost you there for a second.
You still hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. So, yeah, I mean some of these bunting situations were interesting last night, but anyway, I don't want to go into the craziness with the bunting. But yeah, their offense is kind of small, kind of manufacturing runs, and the Angels are just going to beat you up.
For sure.
I don't know a heck of a lot about who's in the Royals rotation, to tell you the truth.
Oh, I can give you that data. I have the depth chart on me. First, we saw Shields last night. The other guys are Justin Vargas.
Shields, right.
Yeah, and that kid Ventura, who just got shelled last night, he's one of the starters. And then after that, it's probably, I don't know who would be after that. It's either going to be Guthrie or Duffy or somebody else. I wouldn't know. In other words, it's a lot of guys that are good, not great. I'm not really sure how, what they're going to do to hold down this lineup.
Yeah, and they're another team like the Orioles with the three guns in the back of the bullpen. You know, three guys all thrown in the high 90s, blowing people away. I think their closers, these are stats I hear in the middle of the game. I think I remember correctly, their closer didn't give up a home run all year.
Wow, pretty good.
So
pretty good.
Their bullpen, at least the three guys at the back end of it, is quite good. The starting rotation is James Shields, who is, you know, despite his nickname, you know, has an ERA in the upper fours in the postseason. And then a bunch of guys who, you know, I don't really know. But, you know, the Angels rotation isn't so hot either.
Right,
so,
fair,
you know,
point.
I'm expecting probably a lot of offense in this series.
I think that's a good point. You know, we look at this and all put all together, I mean, we could see more 98 games in this kind of a series. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on that one. That one starts tomorrow from beautiful, beautiful Orange County, home of many strip malls and freeways. But we'll check it. We'll keep an eye on that one.
Next, tomorrow at 9:30 Eastern.
9:30 Eastern. No, pull up a chair for that one.
They actually made the schedule contingent upon who was going to play. The schedule actually said if it's Kansas City, it starts at 9:30, and if it's Oakland, it starts at 10.
I gotcha.
So it's 9:30.
Good deal.
And the Orioles and Tigers, I think, is six Eastern.
Oh yeah, that's right, six Eastern. Right, that's a nice start. Yeah. Everybody can get plugged into that one.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. East Coast in on it. Okay, so now to the NL series of the division series, and the number one team in the NL, the Washington Nationals, very, very, very stacked. I mean, you're talking about a big team. And they have had a big record. And you know, people have been predicting this for a couple years. I mean, people had the Nationals as favorites to win the World Series. And it looks like this is being realized in the regular season. So they've had a huge year. And you can't really go wrong with this rotation. Steven Strasburg, Jordan Zimmermann, Doug Fister, and then Gio Gonzalez. I mean, that's amazing. that's a pretty good. I'm not saying.
And Tanner Roark, who has been really good this year, is probably not going to start for them.
Wow.
And he's been really good.
Wow.
And Gio Gonzalez actually hasn't been that great until very recently, but he's got the track record.
Right.
And he, Porter, Strasburg, if you remember, everybody remembers, 2 years ago when he didn't pitch in the postseason because they shut him down. This is his first postseason, so we'll see how he handles that. But he's lights out, usually. We all know that. And, you know, yeah, they can pitch. Their closer out of the pen is excellent now that they've gotten rid of Rafael Soriano. So that's good. Their lineup, top to bottom, I mean, you know, as a diehard Met fan that I am, I have seen the Nationals a lot. And they just murder the Mets. I think they were 13-5 against the Mets this year.
Wow.
And the Mets, going into the last series, before the last three-game series, the Mets were 0-13 games for someone who was not Gio Gonzalez. So they won three games, and they were all Gio Gonzalez games, and the other four pitchers just blow the Mets away, and the offense just kills them. I mean, Jason Worth, who everyone forgets about, can rake. You know, you got Bryce Harper, Anthony Rendon, you know, Ryan Zimmerman, who they can't even find a spot for. They can't even find a place to play.
Wow.
Asdrubal Cabrera, Adam LaRoche. Yeah,
indeed, man.
They're set up,
and they will. They are going to be set up. I mean, I think it wouldn't have made any difference who advanced from tonight's game. This is going to be an overwhelming advantage. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. And the one reason I don't think it's going to happen is because Matt Williams, not a fan. I think he's a bit of a mongo. But Let's assume the Giants win out this game. They're up 7-0. 7-0.
7-0. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're gonna win, but you're talking about.
Now I don't know. I wouldn't want to be a Giants fan hearing that now.
Have we opened the door? We will see. Anyway, let's say that they do advance in theoretical terms. Bruce Bochy is simply one of the best postseason managers of our generation. He is so good at getting the right move at the right time. That will serve him well. The only problem is he doesn't have enough pitching, and I think that's going to be the basic problem here. They've got a nice lineup, but it's going to really take a lot. I will say that the Giants have a very good bullpen. You talk about Casilla, Jeremy Affeldt, and then Sergio Romo, not Tony, closing it up for the San Francisco Giants. They've got a lot of postseason experience, 2 World Series under their belt. They certainly are no stranger to October. This will be a very fun one to watch, but I think I'm going to pick the Nationals. How would you see it?
I would pick the Nationals, too. I mean, we were talking about it earlier, but San Francisco is at a big disadvantage because Bumgarner just pitched today.
Yeah,
so
great point.
This series starts on Friday, and Bumgarner can't pitch until what, game 3? I haven't counted the math, but he's not pitching on Friday, and he's not pitching on Saturday, and the next game's on Monday, so he'll probably pitch that one, I guess, if that math is right. Maybe not. Maybe not until Tuesday. I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, he pitched today. So they don't have their best pitcher going in, whereas the Nationals, it doesn't even matter who they pitch because everybody's their best pitcher. And I'm gonna pick the Nationals.
Right, and the counter is the Giants are gonna send out after Bumgarner. You have let me just go to the chart here. I mean, you've got Hudson, Vogelsong, and then it's something, but maybe a tie between Peavy and Lincecum. I mean, this is. It's on paper, it just does not work out for the Giants, but we'll see. We'll see. Okay, final series, we only have about 5 minutes. This is the big one. Cardinals-Dodgers. I mean, it doesn't really get any better than this. And, you know, it's interesting. I know that Michael Wacha was out for most of the year, but it looks like he is going to come back, but in a limited role out of the pen. That's really too bad. If he was able to start, that would really make that series that much closer. But it's already a pretty close series. I mean, Wainwright, Lynn, and then the seasoned John Lackey going against Kershaw, Greinke. We'll see about Ryu. We believe that the reports say that he'll be healthy enough to pitch. His bullpen session went well today, we're told. We'll see. And then Herron will be the other guy in the rotation. So this rotation's both are really good. And then the lineups, well, I'm not really can't really speak to the Cardinals so much, but the Dodgers lineup, you don't have an easy out until the pitcher spot. I mean, even A.J. Ellis at the eighth spot, really good, and so it's worked out well, and they're hitting all at the right time. They can sometimes go hot and cold, but they seem to be hitting their stride right now. It's going to be a good series, though. I don't think it's going to be like a sweep or anything. I think this is going to go the whole five. Let me get your thoughts about Cardinals-Dodgers.
Yeah, the Cardinals, you can never count out the Cardinals, and, you know, they're in it every year. The first game is Kershaw and Wainwright, which is just going to be amazing.
Oh, so good.
You know, that's the East Coast primetime game on Friday at 6:30 Eastern. Kershaw and Wainwright, that's going to be amazing. And you'll probably see it again in the fourth game if there's a fourth game. But, you know, beyond that, yeah, I agree with you about the Dodger lineup. It's very well balanced. Hanley Ramirez is a little shaky because he gets hurt a lot, you know. Also, his defense is kind of shaky. I think the Dodgers, I think Don Mattingly takes him out of the game when they're ahead for defense. But, yeah, their lineup, at least their, at the beginning of the game, is very well balanced. The Cardinals, Matt Holliday kind of, you know, Matt Holliday is Matt Holliday, but he's getting old. They have Yadier Molina, who always turns it on in the postseason, even though he's been hurt this year. I'd probably pick the Dodgers, but you can't count the Cardinals out.
You can't. You really can't. And I'm not going to be the kind of guy that says, oh, this is Dodgers totally have this. They don't. And this is – the Cardinals have been at the October time and time again. It's going to go 5 games. I just see it – no, I don't really see it playing out any differently. And the Cardinals bullpen is just so much better than the Dodgers, except I will say this. In the closer spot, Kenley Jansen is as good a closer as there is in baseball. He's very good. I mean, you pretty much get him up there, and very rarely does he blow the game. He'll do it like 3 or 4 times a year, maybe 6 times a year at the most. But he's really had a great season, so this is just going to be fun.
Yeah.
And I look forward
to it. It's going to be good.
Oh, it's going to be good.
It's going to be, yeah, it's going to be pretty good. The Dodger bullpen outside of the closer, though, a little bit shaky.
Oh,
Brian Wilson,
gosh, yes.
Your favorite guy,
yeah.
Is might be pitching in some big spots.
Oh, Brian Wilson coming out of the pen in the eighth. That's going to be so bad.
Yeah, I mean, you got to worry in that third game with Ryu, right?
Right.
Oh, he hasn't pitched. So
we don't even know if he's going to pitch.
You might have to go in that bullpen early.
Oh, my God.
And if he does pitch, you know, you don't know what, you know, he could, you don't know how long he could last.
Because
he hasn't pitched in the game.
Yeah. There's a lot of drama there for game three. And that's in St. Louis, too. That's the other half of it. My goodness. So, but it'll be fun, though. It'll be fun to watch it and track it. It'll be good stuff. So, that is it for tonight. All right.
Four games this Friday. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, it's going to be a great Friday. So enjoy the games, Ari. I really thank you for coming on with us tonight. And your expertise is most appreciated. We'll keep in touch. Enjoy October. It's going to be a good time.
You too, Dave. Thanks for having me.
You bet. All right. Ari in Philadelphia. That's our MLB preview spot. And away he goes, ready to check out all the action. And that gives way to our Kids Club podcast picks for week number 5. And we go into week 5 with a little bit of a rough week 4 leading into it, meaning that nobody won a game in their college picks, and that's not their fault. It was just a very crazy week, but some games in themselves were not necessarily the greatest, but there were some good matchups in there. I mean, for example, Arkansas versus Texas A&M, that was really great. People did a little better in the NFL picks. But the end result of all of it is Oatman going 1-2-1, with the one being the Baylor-Iowa State game, which was a push. And that was enough to get him in the first place at 8-7-1. John is in Connecticut's in second place at 8-8. Ron is third, 7-8-1. And Andy's still in striking range at 6-10. So let's go ahead and start our spot. We start by introducing our panelists. Tonight we have, right now, we have John and Andy. Ron will not be joining us. I think the old man could be, so stay tuned. We'll start with John first. John, welcome to the show. How's it going tonight?
Thanks for having me back, Dave. I was thinking maybe instead of giving picks tonight, we'd all reminisce about our favorite Derek Jeter memories, but it's up to you.
Derek Jeter. Oh, man. Well, can we have Ernie Johnson, like, narrate it? That would be... Put us to sleep.
Oh, man, he's awful.
Oh, is he ever? Oh, my. Just quickly, let me introduce also Andy in Seattle. Thank you very much for joining us again in back-to-back weeks. How's it going tonight, Andy?
Good. I'm thinking in lieu of the college pigskin talk, we can just keep going with the baseball. I'm juiced up for the playoffs. I mean, St. Louis and... L.A., it seems like they meet every single year.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And then I think like 30 years from now, you know, if you think about these kinds of things, that we're going to talk about the drought of 14. I mean, I'm just looking at the Cardinals' stats right now because, you know, I have rotating stats just in front of my TV because I can't get enough baseball. And just their power numbers. You know, they're second leader in the RBI category. I know advanced stats guys don't care about RBI, but anyway, it's Johnny Peralta. And third guy is Adams, fourth guy Carpenter with 59. I mean, it's just it's a power drought this year. I kind of dig it because it inflates this pitching category. But, you know, the days of guys, multiple guys on teams hitting 40 dongs, even 30 dongs are a thing of yesteryear.
Yeah, it's and I kind of like it, though. I kind of am digging this because it makes the games closer. You have to do more strategy. It's really a lot of fun. I should pass the programming note to all of you guys tonight. Chuckman is running late. His car got stranded in the middle of the rain or something like that. So we actually have some extra time to my gosh, this is rough. But Junkman's trying to get home, and he's still kind of stuck in traction. So we probably have about 10 to 15 extra minutes tonight. So... let's talk, if you want to, we can talk a little bit of baseball. Let me just introduce the Oatman first. The Oatman has joined us. Say hello to Otis. You know him from his recent Twitter battle with Carl Banks. Old man, welcome back. How's it going?
It's going pretty good, Dave. Who knew if you didn't like to listen to a radio program, you'd become public enemy number one on Twitter of a former Giant great. It's pretty crazy.
It's really something. Oh, my goodness. How sensitive is this guy? I mean, it just was epic to watch you guys going back at it. Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I was trying to, you know, keep it civilized. But I could only imagine if he got into it with some of our anti-Mike friends who were telling him to, I don't know, like they would step on his puppy or something. All I told the guy was that I wasn't going to listen to his radio show, and he's telling me to go finger paint and take my medicine. I mean, you got to have a little tougher skin than that. I mean, I know Geno Smith was throwing up the double birds to the fans the other day, telling them to go father themselves. But Carl Banks, maybe you should calm down a little bit.
Oh, seriously? I mean, you don't even have to use his Twitter handle for him to get his attention. I just got two tweets tonight. I swear to God, I just got two tweets from him, unprovoked, about this HSN show that he's plugging, like, where he's selling like NFL merchandise.
I'm sure they're selling like hotcakes, too.
They are so 30K sold in less than 24 hours, Joe Oatman. Did you get yours? Oh, my gosh. You can't make it up. You really can't make it up. Oh, my God. That is crazy. But let's go back to John for a second while I try to calm down here. A game last night. If we stay with baseball just for a second. That game last night was really one of the most exciting baseball games I have seen in a really long time. And I've been watching baseball regularly pretty much forever. But what a game. I mean, the A's and the Royals. And who would have guessed that two small market teams would have captured America like that? But seriously, it was fantastic. I mean, what were your favorite parts of watching that whole game last night, John?
Well, man, just the whole last couple of innings was pretty dramatic. The way the A's played was kind of a microcosm of the season. They got up, three or four runs there, and then they completely collapsed on two separate occasions. First, they were up 7-3, then 8-7 in the, the 12th or the 13th inning. And you had a feel for, Billy Dean and his money ball once again sticks the bit in the playoffs. But I think the first part of the game was tweeting Ernie Johnson calls, about his fourth game. He pretty much would, it'd be the most dramatic ending ever, and he'd be like, oh, well, and that's the game. Good night, folks. We'll see you next time. Because, I mean, there could have been a bomb in the stadium, and he would have just reacted like, oh, okay, oh, well, it's just awful. And Woodson wasn't much better. I think he said three words the whole night. Ron Darling was okay, but that was just a brutal broadcast.
Yeah.
We used to have the guy with the Red Sox on there. I forget his name, but he always did a good job. But I have no idea what they were thinking with Ernie Johnson. And the worst thing is we got him again for the ALDS and ALCS. So many more fun moments ahead.
That's crazy. Andy, you would know who the Red Sox guy is, right? It's like Don
Orsillo. Don Orsillo.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Good deal. Andy, your thoughts about last night's game? It definitely had everybody on the edge of their seats here. What was it like? What were your favorite moments from last night?
Well, honestly, how PBS and History Channel have those shows that are split up into three different segments? Like, there's one on the Roosevelt that has like four episodes, mm-hmm. and World War II. You could actually do this with that last night's game. You could spend like 90-minute segments talking about the game, innings 1-3, innings 4-6, and then 7, 8, 9, and maybe even a fourth for the extra innings. That's how dramatic it was.
Wow. Yeah.
And, I don't know, you can pick any angle, and there's many layers like an onion. Not to sound contrarian, but I can't kill Bean for making the trade he made in July. Largely based on the fact that last year in the playoffs, he had Cologne as your game one start. I know Cologne is good for 162 games, and he won 15 games this year. But, in these short playoff series, I don't think Cologne is going to emote, intimidation in the other team's lineup. So,
he got Lester the Molester, and he got Smarja, and it's easy to laugh that he got this guy from the Cubs that didn't even get to pitch in the postseason in exchange for this prospect. But his other formula where just make it to the playoffs and see what happens, once Zito and Hudson and Mulder left, you know, those guys winning all these games for Oakland were still just kind of flash in the pan or smoke and mirrors pitchers. So he decided to get some real stud starting pitching, and same old ending for Oakland. It's amazing.
It is. I mean, the consistency in losing these winner-take-all games for the Oakland A's, it's almost a little depressing. I really kind of almost wonder what it's like being an A's fan, going through that all the time. So Oatman, now Oatman was a kind of a, was joining into the telecast a little later into the night, I tell you, I mean, that's the sign of a great game where you get people coming in and tuning in. It's like, oh wow, this is a great game. Let's check it out. Tell me what was your feel for this game, and maybe a little bit about Yost, because again, I mean, I think all of us are familiar with Yost. I mean, the two of us would be as NL guys. He got ripped a lot when he was in Milwaukee, too. Your thoughts about last night's game, and is Yost as bad as Pedro Martinez said on the telecast last night?
Yeah, Pedro really went off on him, which was it was interesting listening to it, because at some points I didn't know where he was going to go, whether he was going to kind of slowly slide away from the greedy little type tweaks that he could throw in there, but he really just went for it. All the bunting gets tiring, but I mean, if you look at it, it's the way the Royals have played all year. So why is he going to change what he's doing now just because everyone's watching? They've been a running team. They've been a get 'em over team all season. And I really don't see, I mean, as frustrating as it was to watch a bunt-a-thon, it's the way they've played. So the only really thing, real thing you can get on him for was that crazy, whatever that Billy Butler play was intended to be. I guess he was supposed to run a little bit after the pitch was thrown to try it. They were trying to steal that run. But I can't really get on him as much, just because you don't want to change your whole system as you go into the playoffs. I mean, I'm sure he was feeling a little bit there when they couldn't get that run in from third, but it eventually worked out. You gotta play the way you've been playing. My takeaway from the game, really, kind of outside of the way it was played, was just the atmosphere in Kansas City with that crowd. It's always great when you get one of those crowds that's just desperate to win, just desperate for some playoff action. You don't have to see the same crowds now in Boston or in New York now, when you have all the girls in their pink Yankee hats or pink Red Sox hats. You have, like, real fans who are dying for a win, and you could see the looks on their faces, and, of course, the cameras are going to pan to them when they're down by a run, and everyone's got their heads in their hands. But it's always good to see those crowds that are just begging for a win, and when they're able to get one, just there's nothing like, I mean, that's sports. That's sports,
it is.
Susan. It's just great. It was great to watch.
Just incredible drama. I mean, the storyline of Kansas City having gotten absolutely nothing for three decades and then seeing this is just great. I mean, I just didn't want it to end. That was sort of my feeling throughout most of those latter innings from, like, the seventh inning on. I was like, I didn't want this to end so fast for Kansas City. This was just going to be such an incredible ride. I wouldn't even throw Pittsburgh in the same category because they had the same thing last year, basically. But for Kansas City, it's even more so. I mean, an extra decade on top of that, being out of the playoffs, it really was awesome. I'm just so happy for the city today. And best of luck to them against the Angels, although you probably heard earlier, I'm not giving them much of a shot. Let's talk a little bit about the division series very quickly, and then we'll get to picks. Because we have a huge college football schedule, too. I mean, this whole weekend's going to be great. John, you're first. Tell us a little bit. I don't know if we do each series one by one, but what are your favorite division series to watch for the weekend? Any that stand out to you?
I think they're all going to be pretty competitive. I mean, I don't think you can look at any of the matchups and say, you know, this is really going to be a sweep, although I think the Angels might be in, the Royals might be a little bit of a little out in Anaheim. I agree with you there, Dave. But the rest of them should be pretty exciting. I'm looking forward to that Tigers and Orioles series just because I think there could be a lot of runs scored in that one. And it just seems like it'd be, you know, five close games, five-game series. Same thing with the Dodgers and Cardinals. That should be a pretty good series. I mean, I would have an idea for PBS to, as they show the Royals game, there should be a camera inside the farm to see Mama Caesar action.
Dead right, man. That's got to happen. I'm vouching for that too. Andy, your favorite? What are you looking most forward to this weekend with these division series? Which series are going to stand out to you?
I don't really know. Probably Dodgers Cardinals, to be honest with you. I definitely see where John's coming from with offense and the Tigers and the Orioles. I mean, maybe Washington has just as good of an offense as those other two teams, but I really couldn't tell you much about the Orioles starting pitching. I wouldn't take them super serious in the playoffs. I mean, I think Tillman is like one of their best pitchers, and I don't know, their bullpen or their starting pitching is, I think, has a little bit to be desired. And, you know, the Tigers are a feast and famine team. They got some really good starting pitching. When they got Price, it was basically, we'll see Oakland and Detroit in the ALCS as if it was a foregone conclusion. And then they kind of tailspinned a bit. So that's probably my second favorite series to look forward to. Actually, I don't really have a first one. I just want to see the Dodgers starting pitching do well because postseason pitching is gets everyone pretty excited, and I think they have the best 1-2 combination by far, and then Ryu will be their wild card. It's their bullpen that worries you. The bridge from the starting pitching to Jansen will give you anxiety.
Yeah, for here, there really isn't. Yeah, it's always a picnic when you're going through there. It's crazy. I mean, every time and you're just like, it doesn't really matter who it is. It's just, you're always holding your breath when you get to those middle of the bullpen guys. So let's go to Oatman for his response to favorite division series of the weekend, and there are many. I mean, they're all pretty good. Any that stand out to you?
Yeah, I probably agree with Andy with the Dodgers Cardinals series. I've never been a big Cardinals fan. Hated their previous manager. Kind of flows on into this team. So I'll be looking towards that pitching matchup you were talking earlier with Ari. That Wainwright Kershaw matchup is going to be some game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, now it'll probably go like 7-4, but you would think that's a pitcher's duel Friday. I think that should be a really good series. I think the Nationals, and I know you had mentioned this earlier from Olbermann, I think the Nationals really are going to take their series quickly against the winner of this game tonight. That lineup is deep. The pitching staff is really strong top to bottom. The only slight problem with that team is I would say the back end of the bullpen has to worry you a little bit with Soriano back there doing his histrionics with his untucks and whatnot. But yeah, I think the rest of the series they should go down to the wire. I know that KC is probably not as strong a team, but you never know. You never know what's written in the stars.
Yep.
So maybe KC can get it going a little bit.
A million miles away. I like it. Oh boy, we get ready for that again. Should be a fun time. It's interesting that the broadcast coverage of these division series is a little more split up this year. Half of them will go to Fox for the NL side, and the AL side will be on TBS. That is probably a win for the fans because the Fox series will be covered by some competent broadcasters this time. That's good news. Now let's go to – now, there's not much of a segue here, but enjoy – this will be fun. And I hope you all enjoy those games. I will too. Let's go to college football because there is a lot to talk about. Before we get into picks, though, we do our two college, we do our two pro. Let's talk about some of these ranked matchups. We have a lot of them this weekend. I mean, ranked teams versus other ranked teams. Ole Miss versus Alabama. That's going to be a fun one to watch. We'll see how that one goes. Stanford against Notre Dame. You've got Texas A&M against Mississippi State, which I wouldn't have taken that seriously, but Dak Prescott has really gotten it rolling, and they killed LSU. So that's a big one. And would Auburn LSU be on that chart? I guess so. I would be on that chart too. And I think that's it, but there might be another one I missed. A lot of good games. Which games do you think have the most juice this weekend? We'll go down the line. John, you have the first word. Which games are you finding to be the best? Which games could have the most potential here this weekend in college?
Yeah, I think that the entire SEC West are playing each other this weekend. You mentioned you got Ole Miss and Bama, you got A&M and Mississippi State, you got LSU and Auburn. And I guarantee no matter who loses those games, they will still be ranked next week in the AP poll. And then you have Notre Dame, Stanford, like you mentioned, and then Michigan State, Nebraska for a pretty good Big Ten game. Out of all those, I don't know. I guess I'm really honestly really not looking forward to Ole Miss, Alabama, because I think Ole Miss is incredibly overrated, and I think Bama will handle them pretty easily. I'm not a Mississippi State fan. I don't know why, even though they've played very well this year. That game just doesn't do a lot for me. I guess I have to say Auburn and LSU, just because I love watching that Auburn team and how Gus Malzahn calls plays, and to see them roll up against the LSU defense. That's the game that I'm most looking forward to out of all those. Michigan State, Nebraska is pretty interesting too. The Nebraska running back, Abdullah, is a legitimate Heisman contender, so we'll see what he can do against that Michigan State defense. So, all in all, though, really our first tremendous week of college football. So this is a good day to kind of hang out on the couch and get in some hypothetical wagers.
Yeah, it's definitely that. And there are a couple of the games I'll add to that, in addition to the ranked teams facing each other. Arizona at Oregon tomorrow, I am very interested in. I mean, we've seen Anu Solomon throw very well this season so far. The only issue is the defense just does not match their offense, and that is where you could end up having problems. But at least in the beginning, it could be a very fun game to watch. Another game I like a lot, but maybe this is more of a personal bias, but Arizona State USC, can Berkovici and Arizona State bounce back from that terrible defeat they had against the UCLA Bruins? I feel like they're going to play better at the Coliseum against SC, but SC's going to want their head after last year the way they got beat, maybe, because that game also was the reason it was the final straw that got Lane Kiffin fired a year ago at Tempe. We'll see. Should be fun. So I mentioned my local teams. Let's go to Andy. What are your favorite game matchups of the weekend?
Oh, I can't really single one out. They're all good. They're my babies. College Pickston games.
I dig it.
Single one out. But, no, it's a great weekend. I would say more than 80% of Division I teams have played a third of their schedule. I guess it's a pivot point of the weekend, apparently. All these SEC schools, I think John alluded to it, they all have dreams of winning national championship, and now you're going to separate some pretenders with contenders. But since it's the SEC, like, the one last team will still get a lot of respect from the media. But, yeah, I would talk about that Alabama game and the Oregon game later.
Okay.
Those are when we do the actual picks. And then, I'll be curious to see what all those SEC schools do. I think LSU's having a down year. So, Auburn's entertaining. I think Gus runs a really good offense, so it's entertaining to watch. And, it's always fun to see Notre Dame on prime time. It's not like they're never on or anything like that. So, but they're undefeated, and I think it's a Jekyll and Hyde schedule, because they have to play all those ACC schools. So there's some pastries there, but they actually have a pretty formidable schedule this year. So we'll see how the Irish magic keeps going as we get later into the season.
I think the Irish man depends. Well, I'm not going to say this. I don't want to mess up. My old man is a follower of the Irish. I will not say that. So but let's go to the old man.
Say it.
I was just
say
gonna,
it.
I was just going to say that they were going to have a pretty good season. That was it. Nothing more. I didn't think they were going to, you know, I felt pretty good about them being competitive, and we'll see where it goes from there. It should be an interesting year. So, oh, man, your favorite matchups of the weekend in college.
Well, John and Andy pretty much touched on everything, so I might as well stick with this one here with the Notre Dame-Stanford game. That's going to be obviously the one I pay attention to a little bit more. Wouldn't call myself a diehard Notre Dame fan or anything, but I was actually at the Notre Dame-Syracuse game at MetLife this past weekend, and it was also in prime time, shockingly. And being in that stadium, it was probably one of the most boring sporting events I've ever been to.
Really?
There was,
wow.
There was just so much time being spent just waiting for them to come out of commercials. It
wow.
was unbelievable how much time was spent. The game itself had some early offensive action. Golson had a deep touchdown throw, but it was getting tiring sitting there through the second half. And that was a Syracuse team that, I don't know, left a little to be desired. So it's going to be interesting to step up in competition against Stanford. I mentioned earlier that I was talking to someone earlier. I said that Everett Golson has quite a bit of Geno Smith in him, and that is very, very something that would worry me. He can look good for long stretches, and then he'll throw a pick six for no reason in the fourth quarter when you're up by, I don't know, they were up by two touchdowns or something at that point. So he does make some dumb plays, but he also has the ability always to make one of those game-changing plays with his legs or his arms. So should be an interesting to see how they handle that defense, Stanford defense. So yeah, that'll be the one that I keep an eye on, in addition to the rest of those really good games this week.
And Stanford and Notre Dame played last year, so this is this tail end of a home and home. Last year it was in Stanford. That was a pretty good game too, a pretty competitive.
Now, Stanford should almost be undefeated. They basically outplayed USC in every phase of the game but the scoreboard, and they just foobarred that game. I think USC is going to really regret losing to BC when all said and done.
I think so. It's interesting because they really could win out anyway. They don't play Oregon this year, I don't think. And they already had the Stanford game. So that's the best of the North. If they beat Arizona State, it really just boils down to UCLA. Let's say they went out, they have the one loss. And then you're going to go back to a game against BC, where they were run all over over there in Massachusetts. Crazy that it could have come down. But you know what? I'm going to say this, Andy. This is probably not the season that people expected them to make a serious run. Like, because it's the first year.
Their quarterback's a dodo.
Yeah. A little bit of that, too. So, you know, you just take what you can get. If they can get to a nice bowl, I think that's pretty much the ceiling right now. They're off to a good start, all things considered. Although, granted, again, like you said, that game, they should have won that game. That I think they just simply weren't prepared. It was really as simple as that. So anyway, good observations all. Let's get to the picks. Here we go. Week number 5 of the Kids Club podcast picks. We'll start with Ron's picks, which he sent to us via text. His two college picks are Notre Dame +2 against Stanford. I get the feeling this is going to be either checkered on a checkered or head-to-headed. And so Notre Dame +2, Wisconsin -8 at Northwestern. So there are your two college picks from Ron. And now to John in Connecticut to start us off with your two college picks for week 5.
All right, Dave. Actually, Ron took one of my picks, so I will switch it up here just because I don't want any checker on a checkers. I was actually going to go with Notre Dame. I think they're going to win on Saturday. Just for a quick logic of that game.
I just really don't like David Shaw in these close games. He's like the spitting image of Cardwell. He just gets so tight and so conservative, and I think Everett Golson just makes the Irish so much better compared to last year. Even though he does wear you, as the Oat Man said, I do think Notre Dame will win, but we'll go with something else here. First off, this game is just, it's unbelievable, the spread, but I'm going to go with it anyway. We're going to take East Carolina -42 against XU. Now, if you've been following college football this season, if you're just following the box scores, SMU has yet to score a touchdown in four games. They've been shut out twice, and they scored 6 points in the other two games. And against some decent competition, they played ECU, Baylor, Texas A&M, and then their other game was against North Texas, and they got absolutely destroyed in that one, too. Their coach resigned after two games. Dwayne Jones came with a fit. That just tells you how bad they are. He said it was personal, for personal reasons. But when you got a team this bad, I think he did it because they stink. East Carolina, on the other hand, has been very impressive. They just destroyed North Carolina. They played South Carolina in South Carolina. It's within, I believe, a touchdown. They're the highest-ranked team out of a group of five currently, which is a huge thing because, as we know, one of those teams gets a big bowl at the end of the year. So they're going to run up the score, and they could name their score 42 with an unbelievable amount of points in the college game, but I would be shocked if this game is not like 62-7. I'll give SMU a touchdown. So we'll go East Carolina -42 against SMU for the first game. In the second game, just off the top of my head, I just pulled up the lines here. We're going to go with Tennessee -3 against Florida. Tennessee is much improved this season. Had a great game last weekend against on the road in Athens against Georgia. And I think they're on the cusp of being a contender in the SEC East. I think this line pretty much tells it all. I kind of do a little thing where I guess the line, like my own cousin style type of thing. And I thought Florida would have been favored by a couple in this game, but the fact that Tennessee is -3 to me pretty much says it all. I don't think Florida's really improved that much on offense, so we'll go with Tennessee at home to get the win. So Tennessee -3 versus Florida, and East Carolina -42 against SMU for the college picks.
You know, I think even though it's a big point spread, we have to. It's pretty clear that SMU is a special kind of bad in college football this year. I mean, it's just sad, like watching them play. Even like Kansas was able to beat them once a few years ago. I mean, that tells you how bad they are. Or maybe I had that backwards, but either way, that was not a good game.
The worst part is the last game of the season this year is SMU versus UConn, which might be the worst game in the history of college football.
Well, you may prove to be right on that one. We'll see. So thanks for the picks, John. Let's move to say hello to Oatman, who is currently in first place trying to extend that lead. So let's get your two college picks, week five.
All right. I'm actually going to start with one of the teams that I also picked last week and actually had a, I don't know if it was satisfying, but a push nonetheless, because it was also a push for Mr. Ron as well. That was a game we went head-to-head with. So I am going to take Baylor. I just had it here. It's 15. Sorry, I lost it. All my bets fell off my screen. anyway, I'll keep talking while I look for it.
Okay.
Yeah, their offense has just been incredible all year. I mentioned it last week, one of the bets that I would hypothetically partake in, if that was legal, would be Baylor in the first half, which hit again last week. I will keep my eye out on that for this week as well. Their offense is just really tremendous. Going against this... Jeez, this is frustrating. Sorry, Dave. Give me one second here.
No problem.
-15. All right.
-16.
Now I can rock.
Gotcha.
-15 against Texas. On the road in Texas. Now, Texas, on the other hand, is the same team that, yes, they did happen to beat Kansas last week, and which was, sadly, Charlie Weiss's last game coaching there. He will definitely be missed by all of us. Yes, they did beat them, but on the other hand, they did get crushed by BYU 41-7 earlier this year. And I just think the way Baylor moves the ball, the score is going to resemble that a lot more than it is when Texas played Kansas. So I'm going to stick with Baylor again this week on the road, laying 15 against Texas. Just too much offense, and we're gonna keep it going there.
All right,
for my second game.
All right.
For my second game.
Sorry about that, Oatman. I jumped the gun a bit.
Total gym scenario there. For the second game, I was going to go with a game, but Andy mentioned that he's going to touch on it. So I'm going to move on, and this pick is going to be just purely based on spite. And I am going to take Louisville laying 2.5 against Syracuse because I just hated watching Syracuse that much last week that I really, really just want to bet against them. So I'm changing off from Alabama. I think that's the way Andy's going to go. And I'm just going to go ahead and take Louisville, laying 2.5 in Syracuse, just out of spite. So those are my two college picks.
You know, I really thought Syracuse was going to have an improved season. I mean, they started off pretty nicely, and then they were beating up on Central Michigan. Maybe I should have realized that Central Michigan is just a bad team. And you know, things just did not go well for them after that. So Louisville probably, we're about to find out how good Syracuse really is next weekend. So Andy, it's now your floor. You have the final say. So let's get your two college picks week five.
Okay, game one. We don't have to wait too long for it. It starts tomorrow, and I'm gonna take Oregon. On VegasInsider.com a couple hours ago, it was 23.5. So I don't know if you want to refresh it or confirm it, whatever, but I saw 23.5. It's a lot of points, but, you know, Arizona's had a very good start to their season. They haven't lost. They had that crazy game against Cal where they were, they scored 36 points in the fourth quarter. And that is unheard of, but Cal has no defense, and Arizona has no defense, hence the big comeback and needing 36 points to get back in the game in the fourth quarter. Oregon, they can basically score whenever they want to, although Washington State basically prepared for them as hard as they could, shot their load, and they still end up losing by like 17 points, and their defense was actually pretty good. Oregon, they score in like three plays or less more times than not, and I can just see Arizona's defense not having much of an answer for Moriata and that spread offense. So Arizona will probably score their fair share of points too, but Oregon can hang 50 on you. So game number one, we'll take the Ducks. Not that we're big fans of them or anything. Game number two, I'll take Alabama. John basically listed the reasons why. I think it's Ole Miss is a little overrated. Granted, the game's in Oxford, and I don't know if game day's there, but there's going to be tremendous juice in the building, all the Dixie scenarios. But I don't think Mississippi, based on who they played, who their quarterback is, they basically sleptwalked through Memphis last week. Memphis is a terrible team. And Alabama, they can be Jekyll and Hyde, too. I mean, Saban, more times than not, gets them pumped up and ready to go. Before the Florida game, they had yet to cover. And then they had their first show of the year against Florida. And even then, they gave up some silly points. So it was very lopsided statistically, but the point spread still was in jeopardy for three quarters of the game. And now they're well rested and ready to put on a show for Ole Miss to see. I don't think Ole Miss will be able to keep up with Alabama. I think Cooper is a stud. All of us have seen Cooper play. He's like he's a man among boys, and I don't think Ole Miss will have an answer for him. He could probably cover the spread on his own. So give me Alabama. I saw the line at 6.
All right, well, we've got 6, and I will confirm 23.5 for Oregon against Arizona. So Bama minus 6 at Oxford. And one other note, you are correct, Andy. College game day will be at Oxford this year, or this week for the Ole Miss game. So big moment. I think it's their first trip there, too. John, anybody, is that correct that that's their first trip to Ole Miss ever in game day history?
That is correct.
Wow. Big moment. Good stuff, as I would say. So that'll be a fun time until the game starts, and then we'll see what happens. I kind of like Bama in that spot, too, though. John, I agree with both of you guys, you and Andy. I think, you know, it's just the thing is that I forgot his name all of a sudden. Oh, Bo Wallace. It's such a dunderhead, and I feel like he's due for that, like, 3-interception game one of these weeks. Maybe not this week, but it's going to happen. So we will see about that. So now to NFL picks, where things could get very interesting. Some great matchups this week in the NFL, and even like Minnesota Green Bay could be interesting if Teddy Bridgewater plays. We don't really know yet. It could be a game time decision. I haven't really looked at it. Hopefully he plays. But let's get Ron New Jersey's picks off the bat for NFL. He has the Falcons +4. Oh, baby. At the Giants, big finger. And then you have the Colts. He has the Colts -3.5 against the Baltimore Ravens. So Falcons +4, Colts -3.5. So now let's go to our leader. Say hello to Oatman. Let's get your NFL picks for week 5.
All right. Now, this first pick is going to be kind of LOL Hibbert of me, but I am going to take the New York Football Jets +7 against the San Diego Chargers. I know that I root for the New York Jets, and I know that they have given me much heartache, but I honestly just think this is a good spot for them. It's a very similar feeling that I had going into the Packers game. The Jets D-line going up against San Diego Chargers with their third-string center right now. I really think they can cause a lot of confusion for him. I know Phillip Rivers can get just always finds a way to get his throws out, but they have very little running game. The Jets can stop the run. That's what they do best. They should have Dee Milliner back this week as an option at corner. Not the greatest of options, but it's something. So I really like the Jets this week getting the 7 points. I have a feeling they're going to win outright. The only reason I temper all excitement is because of the quarterback. But I'm hoping that they realize that if they run the ball, pound it a little bit more with Chris Ivory, they've had some success. Geno, if he can stay away from making 2 turnovers, if he can make just 1 dopey turnover, I really think the Jets can win this game. So I'm going to take the 7 points. And I'm going to take the Jets, who always play well in San Diego, against the Chargers. For my second game, I'm going to go to the game you actually mentioned right before you got to round 6. I'm going to take the Packers, and I'm going to lay – I have 8.5. I don't know if that's right. But I'm going to lay the 8.5 with the Packers against Minnesota. Whether Bridgewater plays or not, and I would like that number a lot more if he didn't, but – a rookie quarterback, a short week, Thursday night game, having to go into Green Bay. I don't know how successful that offense could be even against the suspect, I guess is the kind way to say, Packers defense. Aaron Rodgers looked like he was all the way back last week. He can get every one of those receivers involved, and he did. Eddie Lacy had a touchdown. Maybe he's getting back on track. So I really like the Packers this week. It's a big NFL number, but, again, short week. I'm going to take the Packers -8.5 at home against the Vikings.
Yeah, and I think I wonder if that line is accounting for Bridgewater playing or not playing. But either way, I think that's a very, and especially since it's at Green Bay, so this is going to end up being a pretty, yeah, it seems like a pretty gettable point spread. So good luck to your picks, Oatman. Let's go to John in Connecticut next with his selections for the NFL in week five.
All right, well, I have the same checker on the checker with what Iran picks. I think there's really not as many NFL games as college games, but I will stick with it. And it's funny because we kind of have a group text going amongst the kids club members about our hypothetical wagers, and I had said after the last week's Giants game that we need to stop betting against them and change the perception. Well, we would have forgotten that 3 days later because I'll go with the Falcons +4. This line just makes no sense to me. I know Atlanta was bad on Sunday, but, I mean, most times in the NFL, it's been my experience watching the game, but teams play often play their best after an embarrassing performance. Just case in point, the Bucs absolutely embarrassed, come back and they cover and win in Pittsburgh. If you had made this line before last week, you would have said Atlanta -1 or 2. And here they are catching 4 against the Giants. Listen, I know McAdoo is, the new Vince Lombardi calling his plays, Eli's back, a whole bit. Remember talking about run defense is horrible, but this line just doesn't feel right to me. It should be like a pick-em game, and I think there's a lot of value on Atlanta here. So we'll take the Falcons +4 and bounce back game in New York against the Giants. The second game, I'll actually go head-to-head with Ron. I'm going to take the Ravens getting 3.5 in Indianapolis. I am not a fan of the Colts, but I'm not a fan of Andrew Luck. Brand new, but that's just how I feel. I feel as if they're a team that is a real bully team against the Tennessees and the Jacksonville of the world. But when they step up and play an actual football team, they're struggling. I think the Ravens are. I really can't figure out what the style of the Ravens are, but they just seem to get it done every single year. And I feel like this is a field goal game either way, and they're catching 3.5. So I'll go with the points. Atlanta +4 and Baltimore +3.5 for the NFL guys.
Wow, your entire NFL selection goes head to head with Ron in New Jersey this week. This will be interesting because you both are doing pretty close in the standings. So this could be its own separation Sunday. It could be interesting. I'll good luck to your picks, John, and we'll see how it goes. Go ahead, John.
Dave, I think you fell asleep.
What's that?
Yeah, I thought he had the Falcons too. I thought he had the Falcons too.
Oh my God! Yeah, you're right. I did. What my Mongo moment? The Falcons game is a checker and a checker. You are correct. So my fault in that. And I'm wondering if Andy's gonna piggyback on this too, because the Giants have been a very popular team here for different reasons than people would think here on Kids Club. But I kind of like it. I kind of like it though. I'm surprised that they're getting points. I would agree with you there. And sorry, John, in advance, but I like the Ravens too. I think the Ravens are actually going to win the game. I'll tell you, that's how I feel about that one. So we will see. Now to Andy in Seattle for his two picks for NFL Week 5. And I'm curious to know whether the Giants will be in the mix. So go ahead, Andy, take it away.
Outside the program, they probably will be involved, but I'm not going to talk about them on this one. But I wish them all the luck. I mean, they're a fun team most of the time. A lot of ups and downs with those Giants. Anyway, Oatman said what I'm about to say. It's kind of a hard week, some slim picking. So I'm going to stay on a checker with one of his picks. I'll take Green Bay -8 tomorrow. Short week. Green Bay finally was clicking on all cylinders on Sunday. Big win against the Bears. I'm just going to subscribe to the keep it continue theory. Short rest. Hopefully all that momentum can be carried over. The Vikings, I don't know. I just see them struggling to score.
Even if Bridgewater is healthy, the line is based on a probable status for him. So I don't think Green Bay will have any sort of like a letdown factor, but you know, I could be wrong. But anyway, that's not how we're thinking. I think Green Bay will have a pretty good time, an easy way with Minnesota tomorrow. So Green Bay, what, 8.5 minus minus 8.5 for tomorrow?
Yeah, we'll go 8.5. That was Oatman's pick. It's kind of all over the board on Vegas Insider, so let's just say 8.5, and it could end up being considerably more than that anyway.
Haunting. And, yeah, game number two. This is a, again, just kind of carrying their wave of momentum. We'll take Dallas -6. They have definitely surprised a lot of people, myself included. You know, the few times you hear all those experts like Glazer and Aikman or whoever it might be said Dallas has had a ton of question marks going into this year. LOL, why did you ever take the Murray for your running back? You've got no offensive line to help them out. They're done. And after week one, all those thoughts basically were true. But since then, they've had some good wins, embarrassing the Ass Clowns on Sunday. And in comes a Houston team that has, I think they're kind of fragile. I know they got the new coach, and he's trying to establish a style. But they need a quarterback to do that, and Fitzpatrick's not the long-term answer there. I'm not sure what Arian Foster's status is. Do you guys know?
Guys, do you know? Arian Foster? Fellas?
Nope, I have no clue.
Nope, okay.
No, well, I think he's still just questionable probably until late in the week. That's the last thing I know.
All right. Well, I don't think he'd be a factor regardless at this point. I think Dallas will be able to cover the spread. So give me Dallas -6. I don't trust Houston at all.
I can't really trust Houston either. Fitzpatrick is the principal reason, and I think Bill O'Brien's the other. So your picks, just to recap, Packers -8.5 against the Vikings and the Cowboys -6 versus the Texans. So those are week 5 Kids Club podcast picks. Good luck to all. Hang on the line, though, because I just wanted to quickly announce that the Giants have completed the game. Game is final. Final score 8-0. Giants winning. So they advance officially for this series against the Washington Nationals, the team with the number one seed in the NL. So, and this comment from Oatman in chat, which I agree with. Do they really need to do a champagne shower for this? I don't know. I mean, it's kind of winning a wild card game. I'm not sure. Like winning a series, I can see it. Division, but a wild card game, I'm not really.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, right?
I mean, it's one thing if you're the Kansas City Royals and you're advancing for, you know, the first time, you're celebrating, whatnot. The Giants have won, what, 2 World Series in the past however many years?
Yep.
Is this, I don't know, it seems like you go into the real playoffs now. I mean, they were just guys popping 2 Bud Light bottles at a time. And, I mean, first of all, they should not be drinking Bud Light. I mean, you got to, that's not beer. That's just water. But second of all, come on, settle down. Let's get real here.
I got to say, I can't disagree with that. They've been through a lot, I'll say, but still, I mean, a team that experienced, I would not have expected. I mean, they're not going all out with it, but, I mean, I would not have expected quite that much celebration from that team. John, this is it for the Giants, the baseball Giants winning. I mean, what degree do we do these baseball celebrations? Because I don't see any other sport where you're doing a champagne shower for every series. Like, could you imagine in the NBA, like, you win the first round and you end up popping champagne corks and all that? It's a very funny thing to think about.
Yeah, I mean, on a completely unrelated note, they just went to this panel on ESPN, and they're getting to be like the NFL here with their who knew Dallas Braden was on here as a baseball analyst? And that's just crazy. I don't know. I'm dumbfounded right now. This is just nuts.
Boy, that's a blast from the past, isn't it? crazy. Andy, your thought about championship, like postseason celebrations, is it a little bit too much? I mean, is it appropriate? What's your feel on these champagne locker room scenarios?
I'm actually not too familiar on the subject. I'm about to go on Leo's board, and I believe there's some sort of sticky thread titled documenting all postseason locker room celebrations, and there's like a pre-goggles era, but back in the day, goggles weren't worn when they were celebrating, and then somewhere down the line, they start wearing goggles every time, and then that's another thread. So I'll give you all my thoughts some other time down the road.
I dig. All right, guys. Well, that will wrap it up then for Kids Club this week. I really appreciate you all hanging around for a little extra time tonight. I feel bad for the Junk Man. He's still trying to trudge his way home. But in the meanwhile, I want to wish you guys good luck on your picks. Enjoy all the games. There's a lot of games this week. You'll need a lot of TVs or a sports bar at your disposal. I mean, it's going to be pretty intense. So good times. We'll do it again next week. And once again, good luck with your picks. So good night, gentlemen. Thanks very much for joining me tonight.
All right, thanks, Dave.
All right,
good luck, everybody.
All right, fellas.
Yeah, all the luck to Junkman, too.
Yeah,
best
same.
Best wishes.
For sure. Best of luck, Junkie. All right, that's it. Thanks, fellas. That will do it for Kids Club. And since the Junkman is not with us at the moment, we're probably just going to take a quick break, wrap it up, do the post-game presser and stuff like that. We'll be right back. This is Dave in the City. Back at it in the city, 8:33, and a really great time with the Kids Club. And I really want to thank everybody for joining in for an extra long period of time. Andy in Seattle, John in Connecticut, say hello to Otis. This is the biggest group we've had yet on Kids Club podcast picks, and we mix and match a few of the guys each week, but everybody sends in the picks. It's going to be a great weekend of college football and pro football. Really good stuff. I have to do my locks of the week too. Stay tuned for that at DITCOW. We'll tell you more about it. Also at Dining with Dave for my personal thoughts. We'll give it all to you there. And locks of the week will come up probably tomorrow, but I don't know exactly what time. It's a lot of good games, but the caveat of that is it means that they're going to be tough to predict. But I love that Falcons game. I may end up going with it. We'll see what happens as time goes along. big congratulations to the San Francisco Giants. Just when you thought that they were done, they somehow find a way to get back in the postseason, and they win their wild card game. And certainly, they've been through a lot this year. It'll take a lot if they're going to beat the Washington Nationals in the next round, but it could be. You never know. Bruce Bochy can surprise us sometimes with his incredible managerial moves. We'll see what happens. So that's it from here. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Enjoy it as the cooling temperatures make for good weather. It's been a good time. Thank you once again. Also, thanks to Ari in Philadelphia for joining us in our first hour. Sorry for the junk band. It's trouble with the car. I hope he makes it back at some point soon. We'll be thinking of him. But until then, have a great weekend. Enjoy the games. We'll see you next time.